listening to Wake Up Hollywood with Nikki Kolula and Eddie Pence, right here on LA Talk Radio.
With the most, Nikki Kolula. We're going to jump right into this interview. We have a very special guest, a very talented musician, songwriter, guitarist, and producer, Mr. Dave Wood. How are you, Dave?
Good, man. How are you?
Even better the second time. You were saying that you were pulling weeds outside when I texted about doing this interview. It's awesome.
You got me, man. You got me.
So great. You know what? It's nice? It's like when musicians that are doing incredible, extraordinary things, do the absolute ordinary things of home life, house life, being a dad, being a husband, being whatever it is that we have to do to just keep the things rolling. You know what I mean? Yes. So do you have a special technique with your weeds, or are you just like, I'm just going to go at this?
I'm going to give that away, man. priority, you know. Special info, man. I can't talk about that.
Well, you know, it's funny because it's those ordinary things that really actually connect all of us, you know, and we all think that nobody's doing those things when we're kind of doing really fun things, but we all.
Hey, man, I was mowing lawns when I was 7 years old.
Okay.
And I'm sitting here going like, how am I going to teach my son how to do that, how to do that, hey, you want something in life, man, you got to work for it. You got to go out and like show that you can, like, you know, come up with some skill that you can make something of yourself. And it's such an old cliche, but still,
right.
it's I think we forget sometimes how important it is to like pass that stuff along, because it's not common sense a lot of times, surprisingly.
Yeah,
things change so much, you know,
especially with the technology and all of that. But, you know, just to add to the normal things that we do, I always joke with my girlfriend that I will be laying down a guitar solo on a track, like be just like my eyes welling up with tears because I'm embarking or just hitting something that is like right where I want it to be. And then she'll knock on my door and be like, you have clothes to put up. You know, it's like that human part of what we do. It's like, especially when you're working from home, it's like, you don't get that if you're going to a studio, but I know you do tracks at home like myself. And it's like when you are working from home, you are susceptible to all of the house chores and responsibilities of the home. So I know you know.
Tomorrow's trash day if you're keeping score.
Yes. You know. Okay. So I know. Well, let's go back to the way back. What was that moment of zen for you that made you want to become a musician or become a guitarist, or that you fell in love with music? Was it a song you heard on the radio? Was it an MTV music video? Was it somebody playing a song in front of you, maybe a family member? What was that moment of zen for you?
I think the start of it was, strangely enough, probably some Weird Al music.
Awesome.
Kind of caught my ear. And then my dad had a Buddy Rich record. I was a drummer first, and he just had this Buddy Rich record, and there was a solo, Jumping at the Woodside, that it was like, I don't know, man, it just caught my ear, and I was obsessed with it. Not that I wanted to try to play it, but there was something that just sounded like, this is pure electricity.
Yes.
This is pure like fire that I can't explain what this is, but it's freaking me out, and I had to figure out what it was.
It's funny that you said electricity, because that is always the commonality, I think, when an artist or a musician falls in love with art or music, because it's something, it's almost like you can feel the pulse of whatever the energy is running through you, and just you just being enamored and being overwhelmed. It's kind of I feel like listening to old records was that for me. I feel like the first time I saw Jimi Hendrix and Stevie Ray Vaughan was that for me. The first time I saw you know, a band like Dave Matthews Band, or even just watching some epic footage of the Beatles or something that was just iconic. It's always a record, a video, a performance, or somebody even just sitting in front of you and playing music at a level that is so extraordinary that you're like, you're frozen. It always makes me like stop in time. And I know that was what it was like for you as a kid. How old were you when you got that Buddy Rich record?
I was in seventh grade. So, wow, it's almost my son's age. I was 13, 12 or 13.
Wow. That's young to get those moments and know. So did you know that you're like, whatever this is, I want to be a part of it, and I just want to learn?
It didn't hit that hard that fast. It took me a little bit, and then trying to do a gig on drum set and loading the drum set into my mom's car and going like, this is ridiculous. Wait, guitar is super light. That's easy to move around. All right, yeah. I really like Eddie Van Halen too, so I'm going to figure that out.
Well, you're wearing the right shirt for that. I love that. Amazing. That is amazing. And it's funny. I bet you were lugging that hardware around. You're like, I'll keep the drums at home. I might as well pick up guitar. So when did you, what did you buy, an electric guitar, an acoustic guitar? What was that moment for you?
Electric.
Okay. Yeah. And do you remember like the first song you learned, or the first, you know, maybe it was guitar solo, whatever? You probably gravitated towards it pretty quickly.
The first song that I was taught, the first riff that I learned was Iron Man.
That's awesome.
Ozzy.
Yeah. So
it just, you know, the bar chord thing, pretty simple, just kind of just clicked. And it was like, oh, this is cool. I can do this.
I'm going to ask you like a seasoned vet question, because I have these two emotions that I have when I learn songs. And one is, oh, that's it. And then the other one is, oh, that's it. That's like, do you have that too, where it's like, oh, that's all they're doing? Or,
I'll never forget, because I think as musicians, we kind of have this like, music is obviously, and this is so cliche, but music is this special thing that we don't know the tangibility of it. Like the simplest things can sound so amazing.
Yeah.
And I'll never forget going to my teacher. I had this amazing teacher. This was in Chicago when I was first learning. But I was like, hey, this Van Halen song, I wanted to figure out what it was. And I was like, I just could not hear it. I couldn't figure it out. Nothing made sense to me. And I play it for him, and he's just like, plays an E chord, plays a D chord, and plays an A chord. And I'm like, oh my God. That's it?
Right, right.
That's all it is? And it blew my mind, because there was something about the sound and like the distortion and something about just the feel of it that I was just like, oh my God, I have to figure out how to do this exactly.
Yeah. And the other thing too, it's like, you'll figure it out and then you'll go down the rabbit hole and be like, oh, that's cool. And then for me, I always find another degree of what makes it cool. Maybe it's some guitar riff that's like tucked in the back of the track, or a guitar solo that you were like, oh, I'm not that inspired. But then you start getting into it and you're like, oh my God, this is really cool. What's happening here? What were those first solos for you like? You must have been listening to some heavier stuff, because it sounds like you loved Ozzy and Van Halen.
Yeah, I honestly think the first one that did it for me was Rosanna.
Awesome.
Steve Lukather, man. I was like, because, you know, you go through the phase of, you know, the technical stuff, learning. My teacher was really big on reading. Awesome. So I was doing the Mel Bay book and doing, you know, trying to go through all of that. But he was like, okay, at the end of the lesson, we can do some soloing. So we learned, you know, show me some things. But I think the Rosanna solo just kind of like, it's just, you know, it's just a classic. It's so melodic. It's so brilliant. Just the density of it. And
yeah,
the fact that you can sing every note of it and all of that just really attracted me.
Well, it's also like Toto is like this band of incredible session musicians that decided to start a band, and they wrote some iconic songs for people like Michael Jackson and others. But I mean, even their records, I saw them live at the Greek, and I was just like, these guys are just ridiculous. They're just so good. And I love seeing bands like that, because it's like a super band, you know. So did you start bands in high school or college, or when did you start your first like rock band or jazz?
Rock bands, played in any band I could get myself into, would play drums, would play guitar, would switch back and forth. Yeah, just the usual, just doing as much as I could. I was also, since I was a drummer, I also did like high school marching band and played snare drum and did all that stuff. Had buddies that did the whole drum corps thing and was kind of almost went into that route at some point. And I was like, oh, man, I gotta make it, I gotta save my hands. I gotta eat, pick my lane. So I picked.
Well, I joke with my dad because I always wanted to play drums in marching band. And he was like, well, I bought a clarinet. Why don't you play clarinet? And I was like, nah. And I was like, I'm going to play tenor saxophone. So I lugged a tenor saxophone for like a couple days. And he's like, you sure you want that tenor sax? I was like, all right, give me that damn clarinet. I'd rather play drums. He's like, nah, protect your ears. And so now I tease him. I'm like, you know, at least drums would have had a part of my path. Like, I have no clarinet on any track. Like, it is not giving me any musical background to enhance what I'm doing whatsoever. Yeah. So I'm sure drums and being in drum lines and stuff helped your time, helped your sense of precision and rhythm. So when you were switching to guitar, did you feel like you were kind of adapting better?
I mean, we all teach. We all go down that road. I love teaching. And anytime I have a student who just isn't getting it, I'm like, okay, look, you've never picked up a pair of drumsticks, but if I can reduce it down to just a simple rhythm first, if you're not getting the rhythm right, then let's tap it out, get the rhythm thing down. And it really does help every single time we do it. It's like, okay, yeah, this really helps. Cause you know, on guitar, you're doing the rhythm. You've got the right hand technique, the left hand technique. You're trying to place your fingers on chords. You're doing all this stuff and your brain is kind of, you know, skitzing out sometimes. And it's like, hey, drummer, caveman stuff, just here's the rhythm of it. It simplifies it and then pulls it back into, oh, it's that. Okay, that's simple. That's easy.
And it's also kind of like going back to the basics, the fundamentals, and you coming back into like, oh, this is like the organic part of music. This is the roots of music. And then you're applying it with all the complicated stuff when it comes to guitar that we love now. But right. Those are the things that did you find? Because I found this when I was playing. It's like I loved how complex it was too. Like you're playing six strings, not like four on a bass. Or you're playing chords. You have more voices. You know you're playing an acoustic guitar. It's like you can play that anywhere. You don't need an amp. Or if you have an amp, it's like even more power and more excitement. And then you get into the world of pedals and it's like, oh my God, pedals, you know? So like,
it was game over, man. I just reached a point and I'm sure you did too, where it's just like, I don't know what's going on right now, but this is great.
Yes.
I was moving around a lot when I was growing up and that became sort of the constant. I was like, I can always fall back to music. I can always, you know, having a hard time making friends or not, you know, doing so great in school or whatever. It was like, oh man. Yeah. So about that schoolwork, but there's that guitar over there. I want to go and, you know, just practice all night. So
you knew early on that this is what you wanted to do.
Yeah. More or less. I mean, I was nervous like anybody else. It's, you know, I tell people like, unless you need it, like you need oxygen, stay the hell away.
Yes. That's so. Like, so- Tell people if you can make it a hobby because it is not an easy
thing. Thank you. But if you need it like to live, to exist on this planet, then you got to do everything you can. Do everything.
I love that you say that because a lot of people don't understand the lifestyle, the dedication, and I know you can relate to this, the monkey on your back when you don't working on something that you haven't tackled yet. Or because I mean, I'm like always ambitious about stuff too. It's like I will learn, you know, go down a rabbit hole and learn guitar solos of people I love or music or songs or whatever. And once you do that once and you're that dedicated and concentrated in how you work, you kind of wish you could do that every day. And every day that you don't, it eats, and I know it eats at you too, because you can't
operate.
Yes.
I get weirded out. I start acting funny. It's like you haven't eaten the right foods or you haven't eaten, period.
Yes.
Like I need to go take care of this. I need to go like fulfill this and play a little bit and like just get this stuff out of my head. And once I do it, oh, okay, it's my reset. I'm good now.
I love that. I don't think musicians talk about that enough because I think there are responsibilities of just being an adult that you just need to always, to kind of take care of. And we don't talk about that, like, monkey on our back that's just like
Man,
on our shoulder all the time. You know what I mean?
all
Like,
the balance is so hard, man. The balance is so hard between having, the family, helping my kid and doing the whole thing, and just trying to keep my chops up, getting ready for the next gig, or I've got a studio now, so what other things can I do to the studio? It's just it's constant attention, constant like.
oh, it's also amazing when you see, because I know, and I feel like this every time I work on tracks, it's like, where you started, and then where you are, and you see that there's like light years of progress, and it's never enough to fully congratulate yourself. But there are moments where you're like, I know you walk into your studio and you're like, yeah, this is pretty dialed in. Like, this came from a lot of progress.
I never have too many of those moments. I'm always, I do every time I step into the studio, I'm like, man, I'm so grateful that I have this studio. I'm so grateful that I can have people like you over and have other musicians come over and we can jam and we can play and do work together. The perspective thing is tough for me sometimes because it's like we're always, always hustling, always doing, going on to the next thing, the next gig, or keeping the gig that we have, as present and give it as much love and attention as we can. But it's hard sometimes, man. It's definitely hard.
You go through this too. Like, I have these moments where I'm like, by the time I'm 50, I'm gonna just retire from music, produce, or maybe just do with something else. And maybe, like, there is that thing. And the ironic thing is today I started a new reggae band. I'm like, I'm 47. What am I doing starting a new project? But I'm like, no, there's something about music that makes me want to keep trying to start new things, that make me excited about music, because what else are we doing this for? Whether it's a track, whether it's an artist we want to produce, whether it's a gig we want to work at, there's always like two sides of the coin where it's like, oh my God, I got to do this. And then, oh my God, I get to do this. And I think wrestle with all these things. It's funny. I didn't know this was going to turn into a guitarist therapy session, but
Nerdery.
I need it. I need it. And I, it's like, we don't talk about this stuff a lot, but it's important because it is remarkable the things that we're able to do now and put it into action and put it on a track with ease, put it into music. You're working with some phenomenal artists. You're making music with people, for people, and just producing music on the whole all the time. And there has to be so much attention to detail. Are there ever things where you're like, I can let this battle go? Like, are those moments few and far between, or do you feel like, no, it's always worth wrestling over until you get that level of peace with the guitar tone, for example, or the solo, for example? Because I wrestle with this all the time. Like, am I happy with it? Am I content with it? Do I need to go back and like tinker, you know?
Well, that's where I think that's where the studio thing came into it because I was doing sessions and I was like, man, I know the way it needs to sound. I know there's a little too much top end on that guitar and it gets fizzly. Like, I need to figure out how to tame that and how to get my tone exactly the way I'm hearing it. So in answer to your question, yes, I think I have a really hard time letting things go. And I do have regrets. I do listen to certain things and I'm like, oh man. But I think that's more performative, like, oh, I should have, experimented more or whatever. But there's always constraints. But I think sound-wise, I think I'm always really picky about, going the extra mile and doing the extra step. Or saying, hey man, I'm sorry, but the tone that worked best on your record was three microphones. I'm giving you a 57, a 121, and a 421, and that's just the jam. So sorry, you're gonna have to edit or do whatever you want with those three mic tracks. So
Well, it's also come back, you come to that process, like, you with experience, you come to that process where you know right away that this is not working, switch to this is gonna work, or it's like, oh, this works, you know what I mean? And speaking of your setup, let's get a little guitar nerdy, because
hey now.
we like to be guitar nerds. What is your set up, like if you're going to a gig or a setup in any theater, what is your go-to setup? What is your go-to overdrive, amp, guitar?
We're screwed. We're totally screwed. I'm sitting here looking at three pedal boards right now.
Love it.
That I'm going like, I have my studio board with the gig rig switcher, the G3S, I guess. Nope. Which I use for like bigger studio sessions and all that kind of stuff. Or when I need I've got the H90 on there. I've got a whole bunch of overdrives. That's like my big studio session thing. I just, as of 2 months ago, I bought a quad Cortex.
Oh yeah, those are great.
And
the mini or the big, because they're two, right?
big one.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Awesome.
I just, man, I, after flying with my big pedal board, I can't.
Yeah.
I can't do it anymore. I love the switching capabilities. We're in town, great, but I'm done with checking that thing. I'm done with like worrying that when I open it up, they've like ripped everything out.
Yes.
I'll never forget living in New York City. Total tangent. Here we go.
Oh, it's all right.
I'm going to 30th Street Guitars. I don't know if you know Matt at 30th Street Guitars. He's the guy. It's where I bought my 67 Princeton Reverb. And I walk in one day and there is a pedal board that is like, I think it was 5x5. It was massive.
Right.
And there is a pile this high of pedals and cables. And he goes, that's Hiram Bullock's pedal board.
Oh,
and that's what they did to it. Because it's my job to put it back together again.
That's awesome.
Not that I've had that happen to me, but I've had similar things, you know, where I'm just like, man, if I can just have the quad Cortex and have it like simple, I have a backup. I've got another one if I have to deal with anything or whatever. Yeah, so I'm slowly switching over, having that as an alternative for certain gigs.
I have I think I have 8 pedal boards. I know it sounds crazy.
Yeah, no,
I've got big ones for studio stuff. I've got littler ones for gigs. I have much littler ones that I can put in my overhead and travel with it, so that nobody messes with it. And it's like 3 pedals. That's all I need. Boom. And it's because of the same thing. I've had road cases that have gotten damaged and the pedals are fine, but then they go through it and they pull everything out. And then you're like at the gig, basically reassembling your pedal board. And it's the worst feeling ever. So I also have a Kemper. I've got the Tone Master. I just met the
Kemper guitar as well.
Do you know the band Sema Funk?
Yeah, I have heard of them.
They're so great. So I just saw them at the Blue Note, and I just also saw them at the Bowl. And I met the guitarist and I was like, hey man, you weren't playing through an amp, and man, your tone was really fantastic. Like, for not playing through an amp, I said, were you playing through like a Tone Master or something? He said, I was playing through a Hotone. I just used it today. I'll have to send it to you. It's kind of like, the Tone Master, and I bought it. I bought it right after, and it's actually very good. I feel like the Tone Master for that are the best, but man, I still love pedals. I still love, give me 2 pedals and a great amp, and I'm like, I can manage this with like a little bit of delay, an overdrive, and maybe some other color of something. I can manage, you know.
I just did the comparison. So I wish I could show you my studio like this, but I did the comparison of my amp rig on this side and the big pedal board
Ooh.
And the X side with I've got the Tone Master amp, they're like Fender's H12 or whatever it's called. The FR12 or whatever.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay, cool. Side by side, had a little switcher thing. And I was like switching same guitar, same everything going between my presets. It was for the Andra Day gig. And I was like, man, quad Cortex is killing it.
Yeah, it really is. I just saw the amp and I was like, oh my God, they're just making it more convenient. Like the big one is the better one to get. I love that you got the bigger one.
Switch and do all the only thing is the scenes thing becomes a little weird. So I bought the Morningstar, the little 4 pedal switcher thing.
Yep.
And and it's kind of set up and forget about it. I've got Scene ABC and
putting the plugins into it. Are you doing that as well or no?
Yeah, I downloaded some of the newer ones, man. I haven't done it in a like a month or so, but the what are the neural captures, the whatever they're called, the higher quality.
Did you do the Corey Wong one, the neural DSP?
Yeah, I tried that one. It was okay, but there was a Blues Breaker pedal, and there was a, oh man, I forget exactly which ones they were. There was a Deluxe in there, a Blues Breaker pedal, and a Klon pedal, I think. They seemed like they were newer-ish, because everything else I tried, I was like, it's okay, but it feels like we're, you know, it's not quite there yet.
Honestly, I was like. Play with a Duelist yet by chance?
Yes, but it's such a great pedal.
I mean, it's like a one trick pony. I mean, it's like a two trick pony with, you know, right, the Tube Screamer and the Blues Breaker, but man, it is such a good, like, it's like, okay, I don't need much else than this, but yeah, I'm asking because I just think if I was to use a pedal for overdrive, that would be it. But I mean, yes, all the ones that you just mentioned are like the classic pedals that you would ever need. And why do you need anything else? You know what I mean? So
exactly,
I love that. Well, let's talk about you playing with Andra Day. What an incredible experience that must be. You've traveled all over the world playing these crazy venues and amazing shows. You've been in the studio with her, obviously, making records. Mm-hmm. Tell me what some of the most rewarding or musically memorable experience have been, either in the studio or live, for you playing with Andra.
I mean, the most memorable thing was doing her second album. We started it here. And then we did, I think we wrote about 76 songs together.
Wow.
Over the period, she was, you know, this is before she was Billie Holiday in the Billie Holiday movie. And then went on to have the acting career. So, we did like 2.5 years, 3 years before the pandemic, of just recording, writing. It really changed this studio. That's a super long story, but I had incredible engineer Caleb Morris. We were studio partners at the time, and he came in and just, you know, completely flipped up the studio, has all these great connections to all of these great mastering engineers.
Wow.
Who knows exactly what cables to put in, exactly what pre's. And I'm a guitar player, but I also kind of got, you know, been getting into the engineering side of things. And now I'm mixing all the time and all that. But Caleb really helped to inform a lot of how the studio sounds now. And what we found is we started here. Andra's kind of a vampire.
Right.
So it got to be... It got to be one of those situations where I was like, okay, Andra, it's 6 a.m. We're all watching the sun come up again. I, for my neighbor's sake, I just can't do it.
Can't do anymore. That's it.
So we ended up, man. And then like, I think 7 or 8 studios later, going to Electric Lady, going to North Carolina, going to all kinds of studios in Hollywood, East West, Eric Ballantyne's spot, all these great, great, great studios. And then having this huge project with drums recorded at the best rooms with the best mics, with the best everything. And then we would come back to the stuff that we did here. And I'm like, wait a minute. Sounds amazing.
Wow. That's good.
We like the drum sounds that we got here. I hate saying that sometimes because it's like, you're just a home studio.
No, but you know your gear.
We know our gear. Well, Caleb knew the gear, and really I can't tell you how many months upon months of trial and error, trying out different AES cables. You know, I've got a 6-foot AES cable going to the other room because when I plug the 10 in, I'm like, something's wrong. It's like,
yeah,
how have I gone to this level of nerdery? Like, it's just
why musicians die young, man.
Yes, but anyway, so you know, it was just a lot of experimenting, a lot of trial stuff. But you know, that I think that process, I think when we're much older in life and you look back on your career, I will think about those recording sessions and what we went through, the blood, sweat, and tears of that experience was something else. My only thing about it is that there are so many songs that I wish I could play for you right now. I wish the world could hear these songs, because man, there's probably an album and a half full of stuff. I would say put it out, let's get this thing going, and just they're amazing. So happy and proud of that work.
Kind of like I make it a point, like, and you know what? I think it's a different thing when you're on a label too. It's like you have that luxury of being like, oh, let's just put it to the side. And like when you're an indie artist and you spend any amount of money on a track, it's like, no, this is going out. This is going out unless you have to tweak it, re-record it or remix it. But yeah, anything I record gets released, because I'm very like good about that. I know label artists that are like, no, I've got vaults of records that are, I can just wait and just.
But there's such a beauty in that though, man. There's such the immediacy of you've got this hot thing in your hands.
Yes.
And it's like, just put it out. It's a rep. Oh, but it's not perfect. No, screw that.
Yes, I agree.
No one's perfect. No one wants to hear the perfect record. Like it's alive in that moment.
Yeah.
Tangibility to it. It's like, man, put that thing out, let it be, let it live. And if it gains something, if it builds traction, then great. But if you sit on it, you're going to overproduce. You're going to think about it too much. It's going to become overcooked in just the wrong ways.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I had an engineer. He told me he used to play for Van Morrison and Etta James, older guy named Doug Messenger. And he said, get the track to 98%. 100% does not exist. And there's 1,000 ways to get it to 98%. Once you know you get it to 98%, it's finished. And I think that's one of the best things I ever heard, because it's like, we can obsess to get it to 100%. Even when you get it to 98, you're like, but it could be. And it's like, now I'm like, no, it got to 98%. Once it gets...
You know when you've got the 98. You know when you've got the take. Yeah. And we did that for so many songs with Andra. And I was like, oh my God, this is it. Like there's just, you listen back to it and there's something about live musicians playing together in time, in the same room. And there's that organic thing that just takes shape. And it's like, man, you cannot fake that.
Yes.
You cannot recreate it. You cannot. And we would try, man. We had a couple songs that, I mean, it was like, we're pushing 1 o'clock and everybody's just out of their mind, exhausted, tired, you know, emotionally and creatively spent. And we tried to recreate these things and we could not do it. It was impossible.
Of course. That totally makes sense. It's like
that original thing that we listened to might not sound exactly perfect because it was, you know, you're tired and whatever, but man, I listen back to them to this day and I'm going, this is amazing. You can feel the frenetic thing or whatever it is.
Well, you showed me a couple tracks when I was at your place and
Yeah, right.
I mean, just the arrangements, the sounds, the like just sweetness of the recording, her vocals, the harmonies, all of it.
She's amazing, man.
Also the band with Shay and all of you guys. It's like, it's just a real treat to hear music that's treated with that attention to detail. You know, it's like you guys all have that. And speaking of tracks, let's play something. What do you want to play us first?
What did I send you? I sent you the most the weirdest assortment.
I don't have the name, but I've got it in my email. Hold on. Do you have the names on you?
I think so. Let me just pull that up here. Coming in from my gardening, you know.
Oh, you're all good. I have it here. Hold on. I have Dream Reaper. I have Melissa Grace and Ria Josula.
Yeah, so three very different tracks. To kind of show off the studio, maybe Dream Reaper was just in short, my friend Shay Godwin, you know Shay, of course.
Yeah.
He's been producing. I think this is like our seventh or eighth song. He produces out the song. This guy in upstate New York, Roy Park. he's taking these poems that he wrote to his wife, making them into songs. We get together in my studio. Are you going to show the video or just
yeah.
or just
the? Yeah, we're going to show the video.
Okay. So yeah, it kind of shows off the studio. It's a bit of a longer song. I don't know if you want to show the whole thing or not, but
no, we're going to show the whole thing. That's okay. Okay. Called Dream Reaper, and it's by who?
You can say by Roy Park and Shea Godwin.
All right, here's Roy Park, Shea Godwin with Dream Reaper.
She's the only one seen in my dreams I could not forget. When I awoke, her sultry face remained in silhouette. I quickly drifted back to sleep to reach her in my dream. She reappeared as if she never left, her pleading eyes serene. Her beauty engulfs my nights, her love deluged my dreams. Each time her face came into sight, her love gained strength, it seemed. All my dreams were overflowing with my love for her each night. Her face profiled in dreamland.
Sultry beauty.
Sultry beauty.
Beauty in twilight.
I thought that dreams could not be real, even when they're so real. But I prayed for her to come to life, to help my heart to heal. Once I thought I felt her lying on my bed, my arms reached out to hold her, I passed through her instead. So I called to her again to cry how much she's missed. And I promised if she'd be with me, I'd kiss her lips to hips. Then I fell back in the bed, she seemed so real to me. This sultry girl, my glorious pearl, in my dreams so free. All my dreams were overflowing with my love for her each night. Her face profiled in dreamland.
Sultry beauty.
Yes, sultry beauty.
Meet again tonight.
Night after night she haunted my dreams, as real as life could be. Then one night I reached out to see, and there she was next to me.
Thank you for making me real. I've crossed your field of dreams to feel your love's appeal.
Your love has the power to reap your moonflower, to join you in a world for two, and spend my life with you.
Now our world is overflowing with our love of life each night. We celebrate our freedom from the limits of dreamland.
That was awesome. Beautiful song, like crazy jazz and gospel chords and just right. such a good feel. Like, how did you approach this? I mean, this is coming from a poem. How did you turn this into that? That was beautiful.
Well, Shay, I got to give credit to Shay for that. That was all of his doing and him putting everything together. Shay has, you know, comes in and uses the studio and, you know, help putting the song together, the band together, getting it all you know, firing. But it's just they're all different, they're all spontaneous, they're all, you know, he spends a very long time working on the string parts, getting the vocals just right. Roy is a real stickler about his lyrics. So he has a lot of work to do to, you know, get things working. Taking a poem is not the easiest way to do it, but
and does he like kind of direct the style, or you guys kind of do you have full liberty?
He wants.
Wow, that's cool. That's really cool.
He's proven to Roy that he's got his own style, and he's just digging it. He's digging the whole concept.
That's amazing. I mean, the musicianship, recording, the sound, the vibe, it's all just all there.
I got to mix that one, and I think I'm not sure if I mastered that one or not, but yeah, it's kind of taken me down the road of doing a lot of mixing and, you know, really, really getting inside the songs. And there's another one that I wanted to send to you that's not quite finished yet, but yeah, man, they just keep getting better each time, you know.
That's kind of the process. You want them to be that way, you know what I mean? And I also find, like, with records especially, I will go after some things that I probably wouldn't have done on previous records, you know what I mean? And maybe that I won't do again, not because I didn't like it, but it's like, okay, I went through that rite of passage, I want to do different things. And that's part of the process. That's what makes it fun, you know. It's like, maybe it's a guitar sound, maybe it's like an overall sound, maybe it's like having more dirt or less dirt or grit or less grit, or making something super beautiful or making it have some edge.
That's where the crossover to engineering comes into play.
Right.
You know, you've got all the tools at your disposal, and it's like pedals, man. It's like, hey man, check out what I can do with this.
Yeah.
You know,
you came from a rock background, and then you're playing a lot of like gospel, jazz, soul, like in that style. Like, what was that transition like for you? Because there had to be a little bit of a change, obviously, but it's also like a certain bag that I just love. Like, when somebody can do that bag, you're like, okay, if you can do this, you can do all the other stuff, you know?
I came from like a rock background, but being able to read.
Right.
Like, I had a teacher who was really big on reading, so I got that like instilled from day one. And then I heard Chick Corea Electric Band for the first time, and I was like, okay, I don't even know what this is, but I have to figure this out. And that combined with Dave Weckl and the drumming stuff, it was like my brain was exploding.
You'll love this. One of my engineers who's in my songwriting team, he mixed a lot of those live records that were winning Grammys. He's the that mixed a lot of that. And he would show me like live recordings or like takes they didn't use sometimes. And it was just incredible. Just like the raw tracks of the performance alone, without having to do much. I mean, he made it all, you know, have its bells and whistles, but yes, exactly what you said. It's like when you hear somebody of that magnitude approaching music, it's like, oh my God, get out of the way. This is crazy.
Yeah. But then going from the Electric Band stuff to like, you know, real traditional jazz, Miles, Coltrane, the whole thing, Charlie Parker, I'm sight reading the Omni book right now. I'm still trying to get back into that whole world. But, you know, man, the jazz thing never really leaves you. But moving to L.A., I moved to New York and I was doing a lot of jazz stuff, a lot of experimental stuff, sounds and all that. And then moving to LA, it was like, okay, let's get the pop thing together. So I kind of started getting, at some point I went from like total jazz head to, oh, this Jeff Buckley thing is really different and cool. And Radiohead like totally steered me in a different direction. So, you know, sticking with some of the rock stuff a little bit, pulling that back in. But, and now it's just, you know, I don't care. There's good music and there's bad music.
Let's play some more music. What do you want to play next?
Sure. Why don't we do, actually to show off, well, to have some, there's a girl that we produced. I have a production company with my great, great friend, Daniel Capilario. The company's name is 1111 Music Production. And we've got a bunch of artists that come in all the time. So the song "I'll Be Fine."
And the artist is it Ria just how do you say it? Jasula?
That's it.
"I'll Be Fine." Here's "I'll Be Fine" by Ria Jasula.
Yeah. stupid. It's all so bittersweet. It feels like a movie scene. Begging you don't let me go. All alone, this weight on my shoulders.
That was awesome. And I like the little yay. Oh.
Thanks, man. She's really cool. Sweet.
Yeah, just a beautiful song. Beautiful, like kind of a soul ballad. Great vocals, great production. Great. Yeah, yeah. I know there's like a fine line where you're like, okay, we could do this. This. Oh, no, it's good. It's good. It's like, it's just big. It sounds right. It grooves.
Don't get too fancy.
Yes. Meat and potatoes. It's always, trust the meat and potatoes. It's always what people are going to sink their teeth into. So I want to play the last track because we're running out of time, but let's set up the last track. I think it's Care for Yourself. Is that correct?
Care for Yourself, Alyssa Grace. She's blowing up right now. I'm kind of freaking out a little bit. She was my guitar student when she was super young. Produced a couple songs with her. She went on to sign with a label called Artist House in New York City. She's got, 3.5 monthly listeners right now, 3.5 million monthly listeners. She's got all of these new songs coming out. She was hitting, you know, Billboard lately. She's got some shows coming up in LA soon. I'm not really sure the dates yet, but it's kind of a Sabrina Carpenter moment because I was Sabrina Carpenter's MD for a couple years.
That's crazy. That's awesome.
She was younger. And I'm kind of seeing the same trajectory with her. Like she is just, and they're all natural. They're not built in. They're not fake. She's blown up. The song that I sent to you is very different from what she's doing currently.
Okay.
But I just wanted to send you something that was done here and with her.
Yeah.
She'd probably cringe if she knew I was playing this right
now. No, that's all right. Let's play. Here's Care for Yourself by Alyssa Grace.
Thanks, man.
You've been hearing a voice inside your head saying, cut yourself, but why? You don't know how to cope. Even though you have tried, stop worrying about everybody else. It builds up over time. Those intruding thoughts. thoughts. I promise that they're not reality, so just stop to see. You are drowning while helping me breathe. You need to know that you're someone that I need, so care for yourself. Normality, it's all a fantasy, and no one's life is truly that way. What the media is feeding you are filtered standards that are portrayed to be. So stop worrying about everybody else. It builds up over time. Those intruding thoughts, I promise that they're not reality, so just stop to see that you are dying but giving your heartbeat. You need to know that you're someone that I need, so care for yourself. I'm asking, please don't leave me. I'll think that it's my fault and I'll feel guilty. You showed me love, it's now my turn to help. I'm begging, baby, please don't kill yourself. Quit worrying about everybody else and giving away your time. You know I'm hearing you, that's sincere. Don't keep it all inside. I see that you are drowning while helping me breathe. You are dying but giving your heartbeat. You just need to know you're the one I. So care for yourself, don't worry about me. Stay.
Amazing. I don't know why it just ended, but what it was beautiful. Just great vocals. Did you work on the writing and the production as well, or just the production, the recording?
All amazing. She wrote the song, but yeah, we did all the production and we did it together. So yeah.
Dave, everything you touch is liquid gold to the ears, man. It's just ear candy. So where can people find you if they want to find you online and they want to have you produce a track or play guitar for them or above?
They can hit me up at Dave Wood Music. Anything, Instagram, Facebook, any of that. So
you got it all on the same handle.
Same handle, Dave Wood Music.
Amazing. Dave, you are an amazing cat, an amazingly talented guitarist, producer.
Likewise.
Roger, we've got to make some music. We've got to make this happen. Let's do this sometime soon. And yes, Dave, check out Dave Wood Music on all streaming platforms, on all social media. Mostly social media or streaming platforms too?
Mostly social media, just to get in touch. And there's some dribs and drabs out there, of course.
Check out Dave Wood Music on all the social media platforms. And get this guy to produce your next track. He's a one talented dude. On behalf of Dave, myself, and Sam, we'll see you guys next week. Peace, love, and take care of yourselves. We out.
Thank you, Nikki.
You're listening to Wake Up Hollywood with Nikki Corulla and Eddie Pence, right here on LA Talk Radio.